Schmeel, good morning to you.
Morning.
Please the court.
Counsel.
This is an appeal on a replevin action, what began as a replevin action. So we have Foundation One Bank, the appellant, and they enter into a transaction with Jason Swoboda as a borrower. And Jason Swoboda pledges some collateral, a number of things, but what we're here about are two vehicles that were pledged. And that's a 2005 and 2014 Mack truck. So Foundation One Bank gets a preliminary order of replevin. It's going to take possession, or takes possession, I think, of both of them, the 04 and the, or the 05 and the 2014 Mack truck. At that point, a third party comes into the case and makes a motion for leave to intervene. That's Lair Inc. They file a motion for leave to intervene and a motion to reconsider the preliminary order of replevin. And the court does a number of things at that motion to reconsider and motion for leave to intervene. On the motion to reconsider, it returns one of the two, not both, of the Mack trucks to Lair Inc., allows them to have one, which was the 2005, and allows Foundation One Bank to retain the 2014, and also grants them leave to intervene. So Lair Inc. intervenes, and so they file a complaint and intervention.
What was Lair Inc.'s relationship or interaction with Mr. Swoboda?
The relationship between Lair Inc. and Swoboda is not clear. There's certainly a relationship between Lance Lair, who is the son of the owner of Lair Inc. So William Lair is the owner of Lair Inc. Lance Lair has some responsibility and some minority ownership, I think, but Lance and Jason Swoboda have some type of relationship, and we're in business together to some degree in the past. But there's no direct relationship between Lair Inc. and Jason Swoboda.
Does that have any relevance to?
I don't think it does, because what we're dealing with is a replevin and the pleading, which was the complaint and intervention. And the basis of the replevin is a right to execute on a security interest, and the defense ultimately, and the affirmative relief sought by the complaint and intervention, was that Swoboda fraudulently conveyed those titles as security for this loan.
When was the 2014 truck sold?
The 2014 truck, I think, was sold in early 2016.
And where, within the proceedings, who was in the case at that point?
I believe all the parties were in the case at that time. So Lair Inc. was in the case. How Lair Inc. comes in, and I think this is what you're getting at, is they asserted that they were the owners of those two trucks, and that Swoboda didn't have the title to convey.
So the replevin action is there, and in simple terms, who's entitled to the possession. And during the course of the litigation subsequent to the intervention of Lair Inc., the bank sells the 2014 truck. Is that a fair statement?
I believe that is correct. It's possible, and I would have to go back and look, it's possible that the leave to intervene was granted, but the complaint had not yet been entered. And I think that the complaint and intervention had not yet been filed. I think that's more factually accurate, but they certainly had leave to intervene. The complaint to intervene was attached to the motion, but the separate filing docketing the complaint, I believe, occurred after the sale.
But the sale of the 2014, is that right, was after Lair Inc. was in the case?
It was after Lair Inc. was granted leave to enter the case. It may have been before they formalized that by filing the pleading. There was a little bit of a gap, maybe a couple of months. I can't recall exactly.
Thank you.
Do we have competing certificates of title?
Well, the Foundation One Bank doesn't believe so, but I think that Lair Inc. would say otherwise. One of the reasons that one vehicle went back and the other didn't was based on the certificates of title. I call them certificates of title. One was actually a manufacturer statement of origin, but that's essentially a certificate of title prior to the first buyer title in the vehicle. So with respect
to that case, there's a break in the chain, is that right?
Well, there's arguably a break in the chain, but the 2005 was returned at the motion to reconsider, because for the 2005, at that motion, Lair Inc. was able to produce evidence that they had purchased it. They had a bill of sale and a canceled check and all of those things. But with respect to the 2014, they produced a title that said, see, this is where we get title. And it goes from RPM, from this entity, to Lair Inc. But the date that it's signed by RPM, by Lance Lair on behalf of RPM to Lair Inc., the date that that is signed is actually before the date the title was actually issued. So the court was, it appeared to me, somewhat concerned about how the title got signed before it was issued, and so the 2014 stayed with Foundation One and was liquidated.
So within the case, was there some agreement that Exhibit 10 was a fake title?
There was never any agreement as to whether it was.
Is there any dispute?
Exhibit 10 being the
title
that was signed.
The title on the 2014.
There were two titles, actually, I think, that came in on the 2014, if I remember correctly. But really what we're talking about, here's what we have, is we have a complaint in Replevin, and we have essentially the Motor Vehicle Title Act. And the real issue that on appeal here is whether or not, we believe, whether or not the jury instructions were proper. Because we have a Motor Vehicle Title Act that says the certificates of title are prima facie evidence of title. And it says, but that's not conclusive because we recognize there could be fraud, right? Title fraud. And so now we have
which seems to be endemic to the case.
It does. And so, and we think that's important because it raises, in reality, you go back and read it, what we had was we had a trial on fraud, right? I mean, this was a fraud trial. It was
a Replevin case, wasn't
it?
It
was
not?
A Replevin case, but
what,
the issue.
And what is the legal basis to call this a fraud case?
Because that's what happened, because we have the Motor Vehicle Title Act that says the titles themselves are prima facie evidence, and you have a defense to that. And you can come in as a third party, as Lair Inc. did, and assert ownership and claim fraud. And so now the issue that ultimately gets tried in the Replevin and on their declaratory judgment where they affirmatively allege fraud is whether or not there was fraud in the transaction between Foundation One Bank and Swoboda. And so what we really ended up with was trying whether or not there was fraud in that transaction.
Well, why does the intervener care?
The intervener cares because they're saying we own these vehicles. So Foundation One Bank, you can't have them because this person that gave them to you lacked capacity to do so. It was a fraudulent transaction. There's no conveyance and your interest is invalid. So they asserted fraud as a defense to the presumptions under the Motor Vehicle Title Act.
Did they assert it as a defense, or did they assert it in their pleading as, quote, background?
I think they asserted it as background in the form, and I
wasn't
think it
wasn't an affirmative defense.
I think that it was
right in the complaint. Is that correct?
It was not listed as an affirmative defense, but I think it was pled sufficient.
Did you all do an affirmative defense and brought fraud into the case?
Did we?
Yeah.
The Foundation One? No.
Yeah.
I don't believe we asserted fraud. So fraud comes in, but, and again, we provide that jury instruction, and the allegation is that, well, first of all.
Well, before you go, I want to follow up on Judge Miller-Lerman's question. Did you, even though it appeared in the background, did you interpret it as an affirmative defense?
I interpreted it as having been pled as both, honestly. I interpreted it as having been pled as an affirmative defense. I think I believe the court must have interpreted it that way. That's my understanding of it. And it was also pled because they didn't just intervene and say, I have an interest in those vehicles and therefore I have a right to participate in the case. They asserted an affirmative cause of action and a declaratory judgment. So I think they did both. But either way, we end up with a trial where it all turns on whether or not this fraud occurred, and we get no jury instruction of any kind related to fraud, related to whose burden it is to establish a fraud, whether it's an affirmative defense or it's an affirmative relief that's pled separately. And then we don't get any of the things that would flow from a normal fraud
but
instruction.
Let me ask you this, because I understand your position and you made that request, including the fraud language. The bank is relying on the title. Let's talk about the 2014, right? Whether
right.
or not it's Exhibit 10 is fake, right? Then what happens within the lawsuit? Somebody else comes in and said, I can demonstrate to you it's not good. That would not really matter why. It's that you're in possession of a title that wasn't good.
It would matter why, because it would, what burden?
Why does it matter?
Because it matters how they establish their right. If their right is, I'm the owner, and we have a Motor Vehicle Title Act that says the title itself is prima facie evidence, then we have to specifically state, how do we get around the prima facie evidence? It's not conclusive. Under the Motor Vehicle Title Act, it's not conclusive if there's fraud in the transaction. And so, and I'm getting into the instructions and all of that, I think is pretty well set out in the brief, but I think what we ended up with was a trial where the pleadings were amended, as you guys talked about in your most recent case in Denali last month. The pleadings were kind of amended after trial by way of the jury instructions to frame them to the evidence, but then the jury instructions didn't meet the evidence, which was fraud. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kemp, good morning to you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Carson Camphy, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Lear Incorporated, in this matter. This case began when Jason Sobota walked into Foundation One Bank for the first time, and 4 hours later received a $200,000 loan. By pledging collateral, fraudulently pledging collateral, that he had no right or interest in. The Foundation One Bank filed the matter to determine whether or not it had ownership in the Mack trucks that were pledged, and the court entered an order of replevin granting initial possession of the 2014 Mack truck to Foundation One Bank. After a trial on the matter, the jury determined that Lear Incorporated, and not Foundation One Bank, was the rightful owner and entitled to possession of each of the Mack trucks, and awarded damages to Lear Incorporated as required by Nebraska's replevin statutes.
What is the evidence that Lear was the proper owner of the 2014 Mack truck?
Under the statute section 60-140, what is required to determine ownership in a party is that they have possession of the vehicle and that they receive a certificate of title or a manufacturer certificate of origin that has assignments showing that they are the rightful owner of that property. And there was evidence submitted that Lear Incorporated purchased the vehicles, received the titles that were duly assigned to them, and that they had possession of the vehicles. So under that statute, they had a legal right that's recognizable by the courts in that property.
So they showed a chain.
They did, Your Honor.
And did Exhibit 10 show that the bank was relying on show a chain?
Is Exhibit 10 related that, specifically to the 2014 Mack truck?
Yeah.
The Exhibit 2014 showed that there was a transfer from RPM Motors to Jason Sobota. However, that was shown to be a fraudulent document because Jason Sobota did not have possession of that vehicle at the time that that title was issued to him. Jason Sobota was the owner of RPM Motors, who sold the vehicle to Lear Incorporated, and he provided Lear Incorporated with a title for that sale. However, he subsequently went to the state and received a duplicate title, but under 60-140, he has no legally recognizable right in that 2014 Mack truck at the time that he received that title, because he did not have possession of the vehicle at that time. And for that reason, Foundation One Bank could not receive any valid interest in that property due to Jason Sobota having no interest to pledge to it. And the facts in this case clearly show that that Foundation One Bank did not exercise due diligence before granting this loan to Jason Sobota. They didn't run a background check to determine that Jason Sobota was in fact a felon for fraudulent felony convictions in the past. They did not verify that he had possession of the vehicles. It's not clear that he even brought the titles in with him when he received the loan. There's evidence in the record that at least one of the titles that he pledged, he brought in after the date of the loan.
So was the jury instructed about the elements of fraud?
No, Your Honor. The jury was not instructed about the elements of fraud. And in regards to the jury instruction on the affirmative defense of fraud against a third party that was requested and denied by the court, that was properly denied because it was not a correct statement of the law and it wasn't warranted by the evidence in this case. As the appellant has recognized in its briefing, that statement of law that it requested was not based on any cases stating when fraud against a third party is appropriate, and in fact was just a modification of the fraudulent misrepresentation jury instruction, but it omitted the important element of that instruction that the reliance on the misrepresentation has to be reasonable. Without that part in the instruction, it was not a correct statement of the law.
You also ask for jury instructions?
We did also ask for jury instructions, and I'm sorry, I don't recall if we requested any instructions on fraud. But in preparing for the oral arguments, I did find Nebraska Supreme Court case law stating that in a replevin action under Nebraska's replevin statutes, an allegation of fraud does not require an affirmative defense instruction, but instead it merely negates the legal issue of who is the proper owner of the property. And a citation for that case law would be Woodbridge v. DeWitt, 51 Nebraska 98. And so based on that case, it is under Nebraska special public.
Under Woodbridge, you go back to first principles on replevin, who's entitled to possession.
Correct, Your Honor. And by alleging, by stating that fraud was present here and presenting evidence
not,
of that.
Not how you got there. Not what events occurred before your entitlement to possession.
Correct, Your Honor.
Of which fraud would be interesting.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And so, based on that, there's no reason that a jury instruction on fraud was specifically required in this case. And regarding the allegations that the complaint and intervention was not appropriate in this matter by alleging declaratory relief, as acknowledged by Foundation One Bank, Lear Incorporated was not named as a defendant in this matter. It had to intervene through Nebraska's intervention statutes.
So the Lear in the case was an individual.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe Lance Lear and William Lear were both named. However, the owner of the property was Lear Incorporated. And so under Nebraska's intervention statutes, Lear Incorporated was required to make affirmative allegations that it had standing in this matter. And by claiming that it had ownership, that was sufficient to create a factual issue of standing that needed to be presented to the jury. Additionally, under Nebraska's replevin statutes, it has been well held for over 150 years that those are an exception to the general pleading rules, and that a defendant does not have to affirmatively request relief in a circumstance where an order of replevin has granted initial rights and property. Instead, in that matter, when the jury determines at the trial, ultimately, that the plaintiff did not have ownership or possession of that property that it received through an order of replevin, the jury must order that the defendant receive damages in the return of the property or the monetary value of that property. And
if the property is no longer available, then you move on to dollars.
Correct, Your Honor. Okay. And in this case, the 2014 vehicle had been sold. And so the case that we cited in our brief on that matter was School District v. Shoemaker. And in that case, a defendant had issued a general denial. They didn't request replevin or conversion, but the court determined that they were still entitled to the relief of damages under the mandatory language of that statute because that is what the pleading requires in the Nebraska replevin statutes.
Do you think that Shoemaker is your best authority for what needs to be pleaded in a replevin or doesn't?
I believe it is. I believe it directs the court to the fact that the replevin statutes itself require what is required by the court to do in these statutes. It clearly states that there is no affirmative duty to pledge a right to replevin or conversion in order to be entitled to relief.
So you just got to get in the game and claim possession.
Exactly,
is
Your
that
Honor.
Right?
Yes.
Could you speak to the appellant's assignments of error with respect to jury instructions that it claims the court failed to give?
Yes, Your Honor. I would argue that none of those requested instructions raise to the level of plain error. Just as a matter of prejudice, there was no evidence or arguments that were denied by the trial court regarding the issues of a damage set-off, of fraud against two innocent parties, or the prima facie evidence, and therefore the appellant was entitled to make all of the arguments that it desired on those issues and or all the evidence that it desired, and it in fact did. And so it can't
claim. So the premise was these three were not requested, so you're assessing it on the basis of plain error.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that's the legal standard that is applied when an issue of a jury instruction is first raised
but
on appeal.
But they did ask for the instruction pertaining to fraud. What's your reaction?
Yes,
to
fraud
that
against
claim?
The third party. Well, as
they did request such a
yes,
such
Your Honor.
An instruction.
And as discussed a little bit previously, I don't believe that was appropriate based on the contents of the instruction, it wasn't legally correct, and factually, it wasn't required in this case because fraud merely undermines the ownership interest of the party, rather than being an affirmative defense that must be in a jury instruction. And finally, in regards to the ownership interest, I'd like to clarify an issue that was raised in the reply brief by the appellant in regards to the statute 60-164. They try and claim an ownership interest through that, despite the fact that Jason Svoboda had no interest to pledge. However, I would argue that that statute is not relevant in this matter for three reasons. Sorry, if I may briefly conclude on those.
Finish your thought.
Thank you. One, that statute is a perfection statute, and it should not allow someone to obtain a legal right when there's no legal right to flow through the pledging party. Two, that statute explicitly applies only in an instance where there's been a sale of a vehicle. It specifically lists mortgages, conditional sales contracts. And third, even if that statute were to apply under the UCC, Jason Svoboda had no ability to pledge a valid security interest because he had no legal ownership or right to pledge the property. So for those reasons, we'd request that this court affirm the decision of the jury in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is Yakadinsky versus Sutton.